Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It's hour two. It's a Thursday live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1. I'm in a very good mood today. I took 3 milligrams of melatonin last night. Slept like a baby.
I'm scared to take that during the week. I'm so susceptible to medicine.
So am I.
Yeah, so I only take that on the weekends because I am afraid I'll sleep through my alarm.
So I knew sports tonight, sports Monday night, so I knew last night no sports. So I went out with my wife, dinner, came home, watched a couple of TV shows. Unforgotten is my favorite new show. Unforgotten. So good. And I took a 3 milligrams of melatonin. 5 minutes later, dog licking my face. I don't know what planet I'm on. Oh, it's a great night's sleep.
I was ready to go to bed at like 6. It's 6:30.
So dark.
It's so dark so early now.
I know.
I'm like, oh my God, that was a whole night ahead of me.
It's good to have you and Greg Cosell in a couple of minutes. So the story is today, Westbrook wants out of Houston. Okay. All right. Westbrook's not easy. I get it. Never been a big fan of his game, although he's fun to watch. Let's not let James Harden off the hook here. According to Kendrick Perkins, who's very well connected in the NBA, James Harden won't return anybody's phone call for the Rockets. That's not great. James Harden is a much better offensive basketball player than D-Wade. But what made D-Wade a legend, first of all, unlike Harden, D-Wade loved defense. But what takes great scorers and great talent to legends is not your vertical jump or your jumper. It's leadership and self-awareness. Dwayne Wade was like very self-aware. Oh, Shaq's more dominant. It's just LeBron's team. Even though I'm the mayor of Wade County, LeBron's better than me. The ability to go, okay, I know what I am. I understand it. Self-awareness is really, really important in the NBA. I've been watching this league for 4 decades. And there's only been about seven. I've said this before. There's been 7 players who are just like different. Magic was different. Shaq was different. Kobe was different. Michael was different. Bird was different. LeBron's different. Kevin Durant, if he could stay healthy, he's just 7-footer, shoots like a guard. Everybody else is just really, really talented. Some are super talented. Harden's one of those. But James won't give you defense on one end of the floor, which pisses good players off. Because Kobe played it. LeBron played it. Michael played it. Bird tried to play it. Magic couldn't play it, but tried. James doesn't even give you the effort. That really ticks off great. Anthony Davis is great. Kawhi is great. Paul George, Klay Thompson. Steph tries. He's just no good at it. James Harden doesn't even try. So we got no self-awareness there. He won't give it to you on the defensive end. And the great players in this game, Magic was big. It was hard for him to stop little guys. Chris Paul plays defense. Again, the great players in this game, Giannis plays it. Paul Pierce played it. LeBron, Kawhi, Chris Paul. Harden doesn't give you that. So he has no self-awareness that it really ticks off great players. Kevin McHale played it. Bird tried to play it. The second thing is he's got no leadership. There's no leadership skills here. Like, he's not returning phone calls. He couldn't play with Chris Paul. He can't play with now Westbrook. And I keep hearing, oh, he's great friends with him. That doesn't mean anything. I could be great friends with Joy. If we didn't work on the air, it wouldn't work. The friendship thing's always been, laugh to me. Oh, it's get along great with him. She is the best. Are they good at work? No. All right, can't be friends. This has got to work. No matter how good friends we are, right now it's called, I'm working, I'm on the air, I'm talking. There's advertisers and affiliates and stuff. I don't care how good they get along as friends. That means nothing at the barbecue. Game time, 7:30. Do you play together well? So I never bought into Westbrook, Harden, or friends. So what? I mean, Westbrook's a likable guy. Everybody that I've ever met that met Westbrook, they all like him. Everybody likes Westbrook. I've never met a guy in the league that doesn't like Westbrook. He's a great guy to hang out with. He's funny. He's stylish. He's a trash talker. He's very charitable. Westbrook's a great guy. He's just, as a player, he's really hard to play with. And so, but let's not just make this Westbrook's a bad guy. Harden is supposed to be the star of the franchise. Won't return phone calls, won't play defense, not really a leader. Playoff disappointment. He's kind of a one-trick pony. He'll score a bunch of points. Doesn't make anybody better. You know, this is not just a day, let's just hammer Westbrook, who I've always thought has got limitations. Some of this is just like, the burden of being the number one is today, you got to take some of the heat too. It's not all Westbrook. A lot of this is on Harden. Let's bring in Greg Cosell, 41 years, NFL Films. He's our NFL meat sandwich. You play fantasy football, you bet football, you just love football, you like to talk football. Nobody better than Greg Cosell joining me live. All right, let's just break down. Let's go Saints Bucks. So I felt Tampa, let's start with Tampa. I really believe their right tackle is a very good run blocker, Gronk. I like Leonard Fournette. I like Ronald Jones. I think they should be more run-based, 55-45. I really do. I see power running here with great receivers over the top. Sunday, they just said, no, we're going to throw the ball deep. These are low-percentage throws. And I thought, oh, you've lost your identity. You're not even sure what you are. That's what it looked like to me watching Tampa. It was an odd bunch of low-percentage throws. They didn't establish anything. That's what I saw. What did the film see?
Well, there were a couple of things that the film showed. Number one, and it started with the first play of the game, their offensive line really struggled in pass protection, one-on-one individual pass protection across the board. And number two, they really struggled to win versus man coverage. The Saints committed to playing a meaningful amount of man coverage, and they struggled to win versus man coverage. Now, Evans has always had a difficult time with Lattimore. Lattimore, who's not had a great year, he always gets up to play against Mike Evans and plays him very well. And even great quarterbacks, even first ballot Hall of Famers like Tom Brady, Colin, there's a cumulative effect of pressure. When there's bodies around you seemingly on every throw, you get uncomfortable being in the pocket and you naturally start to play a little bit faster and you're just uncomfortable playing the position. And when you then look and you see that people aren't really open and you don't have defined window throws, that just exacerbates the problem. So they really struggled throwing the ball. The question of whether they should run it more, that's a philosophical question.
Yeah.
And maybe it's true, but this is with their weapons. This is who they choose to most predominantly be right now.
Okay. Let's talk about the Saints. They ate up that Bucs defense that we acknowledge, especially up front, is very good. They had seemingly no troubles with it. So what did Todd Bowles do or not do as a defensive coordinator?
Well, let's look at it from the perspective of the Saints first. What the Saints did is they predominantly lined up in base personnel, and they also, with their quick passing game, the ball gets out of Breeze's hand very quickly. So this is philosophical for a defensive coordinator. Number one, most of your pressure packages do not come out of your base defense. They come out of your sub-nickel or your sub-dime, meaning five or six defensive backs. And the Saints played a lot in their base, so they kept the Bucs in their base, which minimizes the pressure schemes. And number two, the philosophy is that, hey, if a quarterback is going to get rid of the ball so quick, I'm not necessarily going to pressure him because whoever I use as a blitzer is not going to get there. The ball's going to be out, so I'm wasting a player. So that's a philosophy that a lot of coaches have when they play against quarterbacks that are very rhythmic and the ball comes out.
You can be, I said this yesterday, the Giants play the Eagles this weekend. The Giants may be the best 2-7 team I've seen in a while. Every week, I've watched them five times the entire game. They've won two of them, and they could have won the other three. Yeah. I watch a team, and I see Miami last year, which is, you know, Miami last year, like, needed more speed. They didn't have a true corner. But at the end of the year, I'm like, man, they play hard. They're buying in. They're losing competitive. I got to tell you something. I don't think it's crazy to suggest the Giants this morning are the best team in that division.
It's a great point because defensively is where you really want to talk about the Giants. Of course, everybody wants to talk about Daniel Jones, but I think defensively they've really improved. They are a very difficult defense, Colin, to play against. They have multiple fronts, the way they use their players. They have blitz packages that are really interesting. There's a lot of disguise and late movement to get to specific coverage concepts. They're a tough defense to decipher and to play against. And I think that this is a very difficult matchup this Sunday for the Philadelphia Eagles.
So
his offense, we know, has not been very good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll tell you what, when you watch, I watched that Rams game, was the first time I watched, and I'm like, oh, they're making Goff incredibly uncomfortable.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, this is, all quarterbacks struggle with that, Goff especially. I mean, Goff, when he's comfortable, wins. When he's uncomfortable, loses. And I do think Carson Wentz this week is going to be uncomfortable. I think the Giants are going to win this football game. I really do. I really like the Giants.
Well, when you play against them, you have to validate and confirm what the coverage is after the snap of the ball. So you have to make your quarterback think that through really quickly. He has to, the term I use is eliminate and isolate. You have to eliminate what's not there and isolate what is there. But you have to do that after the snap. Against most defenses, and defenses don't want this to be the case, but against most defenses, and the great quarterbacks can eliminate and isolate before the snap. The Giants are making you do it after the snap.
All right, Tua's got two games. They didn't ask much the first game. They asked a lot more the second game. Now, I did say this. Arizona's defense, outside of Buda Baker, doesn't have a lot of elite players, so he was moving the ball up and down against, you know, not always a great pass rush. But Miami's offensive line's a work in progress, so let's give Tua credit here. What did you see? What did the film show you that you liked?
Well, I think the film showed me that Chan Gailey understands exactly what Tua's traits and skill set are. Tua is really quick on his drop, plants that back foot. He's a rhythmic timing quarterback. That's his game. There's not a lot of mystery to what Tua's game is. And I thought when I watched that tape, literally every throw, maybe with just one or two exceptions, the ball came out when he hit that back foot,
yep,
which means that the reads and the throws were defined by the pass game concepts. And they also did play action and play action boot, and that also fits his game extremely well. So I thought it was a great mix with Chan Gailey clearly understanding what Tua is. That's the kind of quarterback he is.
By the way, Kyler Murray, I watched him, his first game as a pro last year. I'm like, okay, let me see another one. His second game, I came on the air and I told Joy, I'm like, that is, he's even more elusive than Russell Wilson and throws as pretty a ball. I think he's just getting better and better and better. I really do. I thought last week, despite losing, I think he's a handful. And I really think there's more to him. I think every time every third game, I feel like I get a different version. What is the film saying on Kyler?
Yeah, I think overall it's very positive. I think that he throws a beautiful ball. He's a very good thrower. He certainly has great movement. The designed run game is a meaningful part of what the Cards do on offense. And, of course, he's got scrambling second reaction ability. I think for him to become great, and I'm not one who uses that term loosely, he needs to become a little more consistent as a passer in terms of a ball placement, throw after throw after throw. He had a very good game this week, and then on that critical third and one or third and two play at the end, which is, by NFL standards, an easy throw, he throws it in the dirt. So I think that there's a lot to like about him, and he's special as a mover and can make really excellent throws, and I think he's definitely an ascending player.
So it's interesting. The first month of the year, Josh Allen was completing 78 of his throws, what you call downfield, 15-plus.
Yep.
The next 4 weeks, he completed 25% of those. So I did some diving on this, deep diving. And when John Brown's available, he's a different quarterback. His, like, the numbers change. And I watched them this weekend, and I'm like, what am I getting this inconsistency for? Because he's always big and he's always got a strong arm and he's always mobile. Could it be that there are receivers for young quarterbacks that they feel very comfortable throwing to, and when they're not available, they're a different quarterback? And could it be that for Josh Allen?
Well, it's not just John Brown as a person. Here's what it is, Colin. This team lines up with four wide receivers on the field, what we call 10 personnel, one yep. back and four wide receivers
yeah.
on over 20% of their offensive snaps. And that's with John Brown missing time. So they want to play meaningfully out of 10 personnel. And Josh Allen's passing numbers out of 10 personnel are off the charts. So when they're missing John Brown, they can't play out of 10 personnel the way they want to. And Josh Allen is very good as a spread quarterback. So this is just something tactically that they do exceptionally well. So while John Brown is a very good receiver, it's not just John Brown. It's what he allows them to do from a personnel and tactical perspective.
So your play of the week is with Ryan Tannehill. And we were talking about this. I loved Tennessee at the end of last year, and I loved them at the start of this year. They lose close to the Steelers, and then they go out, and this often happens. You play a big emotional rivalry game. Next week, you're flat. They go out and play Cincinnati. I mean, 8 minutes in, you're like, okay, they're just not here ready to play. And then last week, they come out, and they're very dominant early. And I believe that is what Tennessee is. I don't think it's Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati's a post-Steeler result. So, I've said this to Joy, is I was never a Tannehill guy. Now I reluctantly embrace that he's good enough to win playoff games. So that's if you're good enough to win playoff games, you're probably good enough to get to a Super Bowl. What do you make of Tannehill and Tennessee right now?
I'll answer that this way. I think they're walking a fine line, Colin. I think that they have to be careful because the bottom line in the NFL is your pass game and your run game have to be able to operate independently of one another any given week. They can't be dependent on each other for you to be successful. So in other words, you can't just have a pass game that works off Derrick Henry. Your pass game any given week has to be independent of Derrick Henry and the run game. And I think right now they're trying to figure that out and working through that. Because if they don't work through that and their pass game is just a function of their run game, it will not be good enough to win big games. So having said that, let's go to this big play because this was a great, great throw by Tannehill. And this was a slot fade to A.J. Brown, who's a very, very good receiver. But this came on a third and two. And third and two is important for this play. They're in a two-by-two set, two receivers to each side of the formation. Because it's third and two, the Bears are playing man coverage. It's a man coverage down in distance. Let's focus to the field side of the formation. And there's A.J. Brown in a wide slot with Buster Screen, a good slot corner matched in press coverage. Now, a slot fade is a very common route in the NFL. All teams have it in their playbook. And you'll see that Buster Screen is with Brown. He's right with him in his hip pocket. This is when Tannehill delivers the football because this is a spot throw. He's not waiting to see if A.J. Brown wins. This is a spot throw, and you couldn't place it in A.J. Brown's hands any better than Tannehill did. That play was made by the throw.
Good stuff. Greg Cosell, NFL Films, 41 years. Good talking to you, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah, the Kyler stuff is, and it's funny, a couple of weeks ago, Kyler had a really bad start. Who was it against? Was it against Seattle? And like the first quarter, you're like, okay, he's just, and Russell has this, by the way. Russell Wilson will have these quarters when you're like, oh, he's just, maybe it's a baseball thing. Like he is just off. It is just not there. But boy, when Kyler heats up and gets into a rhythm, they say this about baseball pitchers. Some guys are better, like they need five innings. They're better. Nolan Ryan was legendary. If Nolan got through five, he was going eight. Verlander was like that. Like, Kyler's one of those guys. He can be spotty, but when he gets rolling, when he gets in a rhythm, it's like shortstop to first throw, man. He is money. All right. Official time to read a spot. Coming up, Chris Broussard on James Harden, Westbrook, and the mess with the Houston Rockets. It is officially a mess. Westbrook wants out, and Harden won't return anybody's calls. Houston's gone from legitimate to a dumpster fire. Broussard talks about that.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Tonight, division rivals square off as the Colts and Titans battle for first place in the AFC South. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video.
Low-scoring game. Take the Titans by a touchdown. Cozy bras, underwear, loungewear, pajamas. TommyJohn.com, code HERD. Limited time only, $25 off site-wide. TommyJohn.com, code H-E-R-D. Yeah, it's actually a good football game. It means a lot. There's a couple games this week that are going to be ugly but meaningful. This is the first. The second, the Giants are going to beat the Eagles. And I love Carson Wentz, and I love the Eagles. This morning, I think the Giants are the best team in that division. They may not win a lot. It's the best team in that division. Even Greg Cosell said it. They're the Miami Dolphins of last year. Watch the Giants go on a run here and win like 4 out of 6. Every time I watch them, I'm like, I think they're just Daniel Jones makes 3 mistakes a game. Get down to 2, they win the games. That's it.
Can you imagine if they had Saquon this year?
That's what they need. They're actually very lucky. What they need...
They already have.
Well, what they need is available in the number 2 and 3 and 4 draft pick. They need a star receiver so Sterling Shepard can be a Duke. Because Saquon, Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard, and a star receiver. That's exactly what they need, is a star receiver. And there's a kid out of LSU that is about the fourth pick. So the Giants get lucky here. The Cowboys actually need nothing in the first five picks. They don't need a quarterback, according to Jerry. And that's what's available. What the Cowboys need is really available in pick 15 to 25. Another corner, and there's a bunch of those. That's why Dallas should trade down. Like, the Jets and the Jags need quarterbacks, right? According to all the experts. I don't think the Jets do, but they'll pick one. Quarterbacks line up with what they need. The Giants are perfect. They need a receiver, and you don't want to draft him 1 or 2. He may not even be a 3, but the Giants are going to win enough games. They're going to draft top 10. But if you get the 5th pick, go get a superstar receiver. And that's exactly what the Giants need. The defense is fine. Saquon, Evan Ingram, Daniel Jones, star receiver, Sterling Shepard. That's a division-winning team. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, as we mentioned earlier in the show, Brett Favre said that he thinks the Eagles should have kept Nick Foles instead of Carson Wentz after their Super Bowl season.
Can't do it.
Doug Peterson was asked about these comments, and he came to the defense of his quarterback.
Carson's our guy. Carson's our draft pick. Carson's the guy that is going to carry us and lead this football team. And listen, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. Those aren't my words. Those aren't Howie's words, Jeffrey's words. Those are his words. I mean, that I respect that opinion. Whatever he wants to say, that's fine. And we're going to remain friends. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. All I know is that Carson Wentz is our guy.
I'm amazed. I could not, with a straight face, be a media person. I understand when the fans get frustrated with the media. I could not, with a straight face, ask Doug Peterson at a press conference, what about Jalen Hurts? You're paying Carson Wentz $150 million. I couldn't ask a question in a press conference.
But you kind of have to.
Do I?
I think you do. If there's enough of the conversation.
They keep winning.
Locally.
They're in first place. I don't know. I mean,
I think it's a ridiculous notion. But I'm telling you, having worked locally, as you have as well, sometimes these conversations within the local media and within the local fan base and area get a little bit of a drumbeat. Like, for example, there was a legitimate conversation about if the Dolphins should bench Ryan Tannehill for Matt Moore.
Now, again, I'd go
for
over and
I'd
punch a sports writer right in the neck. You can't ask that.
I mean, for a long time. Like, so if and I'm sure the question was asked, like, is that a possibility? I think Matt Moore is an excellent backup quarterback.
That's all he is.
But that is not a real conversation that anyone in the building is having. However, sometimes those conversations just get a little bit of life and you have to ask. It's a little ironic that Brett Favre is saying this about Carson Wentz when Carson Wentz and Brett Favre have a very similar style of play. And
reckless.
He's talking about efficiency, and that is not what Brett Favre was known for.
You know, Brett Favre is saying, you got to make a decision on this. It's like the whole knock on Brett Favre's last 4 years is he didn't want to get to retire. He kept threatening it. Like, again, Brett Favre's a legend. I'm not looking for his opinion on Nick Foles. Like, I'm done with that segment.
Well, I mean, and of course, everyone's entitled to their opinion. Like, we all have opinions about everything. And sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong. That's fine. But we have it. Enough evidence that Nick Foles is not as good as Carson Wentz. And listen, at first, when it first happened and Nick Foles first won the Super Bowl, I think it's fair to legitimately have that conversation. Like, oh, you just won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You
know, no,
In the moment.
But
yeah.
Like, then when you get 15 more starts and you're like, oh, this isn't.
Yeah, we've had space and time and he's gone to another team.
And been bad.
Right.
Jacksonville, and then bad again. By the way, Gardner Minshew and Mitch Trubisky, I could argue in both cases, just win more games. I'm not even an argument. They do win more games at Jacksonville and Chicago, respectively. They win more games. It's about winning games.
So the Colts and Titans face off in a pivotal AFC South showdown tonight for first place in the division. The Colts don't have a great recent history on Thursday night, losing their last 4 in a row.
Really?
But they are on the road against Tennessee. They've won 7 of their previous 8 games, including the last 2. This is kind of an interesting game tonight because it's really the strengths against strengths and weaknesses against weaknesses, right? Like the Titans defense isn't really great. Colts offense isn't really great. Titans offense is playing a lot better, and obviously we know what the Colts defense is.
Well, the Colts proved to the NFL you can do everything right. Their GM's good, their coach is good, their defense is good, their O-line's good. They got good running backs. If you don't have the quarterback right, it's nonsense. The Colts do everything right. They can't get the quarterback. So that in the end, this is why people trade 7 picks and coaches for quarterbacks.
And why our patience for quarterbacks is shorter than it's ever been. FoxBet has the Colts favored by 1.5 tonight. Derrick Henry is obviously the star of the game tonight, averaging 5.89 yards per rush in his career against the Colts, and the second best against a single opponent. But the Colts defense is allowing the third fewest rush yards per game this season. So it's a head-to-head battle in those cases. So the NBA and especially the Eastern Conference is going to look a lot different this season with Kevin Durant returning this year. But former NBA champion Brian Scalabrine doesn't think the pairing of KD and Kyrie in Brooklyn is a lock to win a title.
Thank you.
I don't think their talent is good enough to win a championship. There's a reason why Kyrie was so spectacular that year. He was playing with LeBron James. Like, Kevin Durant is not LeBron. He's a very different player. He's not the kind of guy that's just going to get everybody better around him. I don't think it's a ticking time bomb. I just don't feel like they're better than a lot of these other teams. I don't think they're tougher than a lot of these other teams.
I totally agree. I think Golden State, everybody's sleeping on Golden State next year.
Everyone's forgetting about Golden State. But I also think this is a very interesting experiment in Brooklyn, right? Sure. People have completely forgotten about what Kevin Durant is capable of, and we're going to see it in a very different situation with Kyrie. Hopefully Kyrie is fully healthy for the season, and I think KD's going to come back as good as he was before. I know everyone's talking about this Achilles injury. Like, he's had plenty of time to rest and recover. He's going to be fine. But it is a very, it's going to be a very dynamic situation. Brooklyn was not bad at the end of last season. We saw what they did in the bubble. They've been building a little bit of a culture there. I just think this is going to be one of those seasons where we're going to be like, oh, we forgot about the Golden State Warriors. Well, we forgot about the Brooklyn Nets. And I think that there's a lot of teams that are going to emerge this season too. I think Philadelphia is going to be a lot better. Like, this, the East is going to look a lot different. And I also think that the West isn't going to be as copy and paste as it was last year. I don't know what's going to happen with the Lakers. They haven't had a lot of time off since the bubble ended. LeBron James is not going to be coming back ready. Like, he's already, a lot of the stars have already said, like, that have been in the bubble for a long time, we're going to be resting.
Yeah.
So the NBA season is just around the corner. It's going to look very different this year.
Yeah, enjoy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
By the way, I saw this story this morning that Kyler Murray is halfway to the NFL's first 4,000-yard passing, 1,000-yard rushing season. Just to put it in perspective, when Cam Newton came into the league, it was just considered crazy. Nobody did that. Yeah. So let's see this. Cam Newton. Cam Newton rushed for 700 yards. Kyler's going to blow through it and get 1,000. Just think about that. How much Cam ran. And he's already at 2,100 passing yards. You know, I was saying this morning. There's a difference between a model and a supermodel. A model, you walk into a bar and see Pamela Anderson when she's 25. The hair, the curves, that's a model. But she's never been a supermodel. Kate Moss was a supermodel. You walk into a bar and not notice her. Because if you look at facial symmetry, if you went to the top modeling agencies in London, Paris, New York, the Ford modeling agency, Pamela Anderson's a model. You put her in a magazine. Kate Moss makes $10 million a year. Naomi Campbell makes $10 million a year. Unlike being on Vogue and all those magazine covers. One of them doesn't get as much attention. The model to the average person without discernment is, ooh, she is the best looking person I ever saw. But people who dissect that stuff, with like Kate Moss is a top 10 supermodel ever. Cam's a model. Kyler's a supermodel. Meaning that Cam gets attention. The smile, the stature, the size. But when you start dissecting it, Kyler Murray does everything better than Cam. Everything. He's a better thrower of the football. He's a more consistent thrower. He's more accurate. He's faster. He's more elusive. Nobody hits him. In fact, the knock is, well, Cam was great in the red zone at the goal line. Carolina's actually gotten better since he left. Carolina this year is number 2 in the NFL in red zone with Teddy Bridgewater. Meanwhile, Arizona with Kyler in an average offensive line and their best running back hurt, top 6 in the league. So the one thing we look at Cam is absolutely better. Oh, first and goal, he's the best. I think over time, Kyler will be better. But if they walked in together to a combine, you would just point to Cam. You'd be, oh, my God, the smile, the look, the confidence, the arm. That I watched Cam throw the other night. It looks painful. He's an arm thrower. He doesn't use his legs. He's been in the NFL 10 years. He still throws the ball. It's all arm. Kyler sets up. He's a baseball player. He throws it. It just looks beautiful. The ball pops. But that's the difference between model and supermodel. So the average guy, us, woo! But the people that do it for a living would be like, no, Kate Moss, Naomi Campbell, that's a supermodel. Like magazine covers, facial symmetry, perfect skin, blah, blah, blah. And I think if Cam and Kyler walked into the draft at the same time, everybody would draft Cam. Except the deep divers. They'd be like, no, Kyler does everything better than Cam. Everything. He's faster. I mean, literally 40-yard dash faster. He's more elusive. He never gets hit. Cam always got hit. I think he's better in the red zone. I think he's a better thrower. I think he's more accurate. He's got better form. He uses his legs more. By the way, he slides. Cam didn't slide to get hit. I think I watched Kyler Murray in his second game, and I was like, oh, my God. I watched Cam for 10 years. I'm still not all in. I still don't get it. He drives me nuts. Second game with Kyler, I was like, oh, my God. That's Russell Wilson on roids. Like, Russell didn't run around like that. Russell runs mostly to get time to throw. Kyler's like, I'm just going to run. Yesterday, Chris Spielman, one of the best linebackers, you know, he was an All-American, goes to the NFL, still holds the Lions' all-time tackling record, but only 8 years there, said yesterday that Kyler reminds him of Barry Sanders, the second hardest guy he's ever seen to bring down. And I was like, yeah, that's what he is. You think Cam runs around? You could get a piece of Cam. Everybody got a piece of Cam. Cam would run you over, but everybody got a shot at Cam, sometimes too much. Kyler, you can't even get a hit on him. Can't even touch him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Browns Texans is featured in this week's free-to-play Super 6 contest, where players have won over $1 million so far this year. All you have to do is correctly predict the outcome of 6 NFL games, so get your picks in before kickoff Sunday for your chance to be a millionaire. And for top stories, scores, and more, go to the Fox Sports app. Call and give us your winner and final score for Browns, Texans.
Browns win by a touchdown, 27-20. That's what I like. Chris Broussard's joining us live, Fox Sports NBA guy. We got all sorts of news in the NBA today. Russell Westbrook reportedly wants out of Houston. Chris Broussard now joining me live. All right, we're all going to beat up on Westbrook. Westbrook wants out. Westbrook, this is no good. Westbrook's hard to play with. Some of this is on James Harden, though, isn't it? He can't get along with anybody.
Some of it's on James Harden. I'm also going to throw out a mystery name at the end of my rant to put a little blame on as well. But, yeah, James Harden, look, Dwight Howard, right? They brought in the big man to go with the perimeter star to win a championship in Houston. By the end of their tenure, both of them were trying to get each other traded. All right, Chris Paul, Harden was talking with Chris while Chris was with the Clippers, recruiting him. It's going to work out. We'll be great together. We'll win a championship. After 2 years, they didn't want any part of each other. And now, childhood friend, I don't know, their relationship hopefully is still intact and they're still friends, but Westbrook wants the ball in his hands. Obviously, Harden keeps the ball in his hands. So now Russ wants out. So yes, some of it is on James Harden without question. Here's the mystery name though, Colin. Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni creates ball-dominant monsters. Now, I like Mike D'Antoni. I think he's a Hall of Fame coach, contrary to most media brethren. But everywhere he goes, he coaches, and one guy controls everything. Dominates the ball, creates all the offense. It was Steve Nash in Phoenix, which was fine because you had players around him that fit that style. And Nash was more of a passer than a scorer. You had Jeremy Lin for a brief moment in New York. But guess who wasn't happy during Lin's sanity? Carmelo Anthony, your star, because it was one guy dominating everything and it wasn't him. And now in Houston, James Harden used to be well-rounded. He used to be a versatile offensive player. He was young in OKC, I give you that. But he still showed he didn't have to be the man. He didn't have to dominate the ball. He could blend in with other stars. A few years in Mike D'Antoni's system, though, averaging 35, winning MVPs, becoming, to some people, the greatest scorer we've ever seen, putting up pre-merger numbers, and now he only wants to dominate the ball. And so some of this is on Mike D'Antoni creating a monster in James Harden.
Westbrook's legacy doesn't work anywhere, does he? What's his legacy?
Westbrook is in that unique space where he doesn't really have to win a title. Now, granted, if he led a team to a championship or even was the second guy, it would certainly boost his legacy and take him to another level. But we have kind of decided on Westbrook, he's not going to win a championship. That style of play, just it doesn't happen. Just like Colin, we decided on Allen Iverson about two-thirds of the way through his career. Man, this dude is awesome. He's an all-time great. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. We haven't seen too many like him, but we all knew he ain't winning a championship. There's no way, you know? And that's where Westbrook is. Like Iverson, Westbrook will be iconic because those triple-double seasons, Colin, unless they become commonplace, unless Luka starts doing it every other year, LeBron does it next season, barring that, we will look back at Russell Westbrook as an icon. When we think of Oscar Robertson, we don't think of the championship he won in 1971 with Lou Alcindor, even though Oscar was great that year and in those finals. He averaged 23 and almost 10 assists in those finals. They swept Baltimore, Earl to Pearl Monroe. But we don't even think about that. We think he averaged a triple-double for a whole season. That's what we'll think about with Russell Westbrook 20, 30 years from now. We say, man, it was this kid. He didn't win it, but he averaged a triple-double for 3 years, and he was only 6 feet, 2 or 3 inches tall. That's his legacy, and that's what we remember, Matt.
3 minutes left. I've always been a huge fan of Chris Paul. Everybody always said he's hard to play with, but that's funny. We never talk about Blake Griffin anymore. Why? Because Chris Paul doesn't play with him. We don't talk about DeAndre Jordan. Oklahoma City was great with him last year, and a bunch of guys you've never heard of. Chris Paul wants out. I'm going to throw one at you, and it sounds crazy. He loves L.A. Unlike Kawhi, he's a verbal leader. He was the face of the franchise. He elevates others. Chris Paul to the Clippers makes a ton of sense to me. Your thoughts?
I love it. I just don't know how it happens. Now, are you saying Chris Paul to the Clippers and they keep Kawhi, obviously,
yes,
but also Paul George?
No, I'm saying you got to move Paul George.
Yeah, see, that's where – really?
Yes.
See, look, Chris Paul is a better player than Paul George.
Yes.
Even as Chris has had his struggles in the playoffs at times, I still trust him far more in the playoffs than Paul George. Here's the problem with that, Colin. Chris is he's 35, and even though he played a full season last year, the three previous years when he had a chance to win a championship, He missed more than 20 games each of the three seasons. And remember, he missed the two most important games of the season in the playoffs against Golden State when Houston really had a chance to win it. So I would hesitate to give up a star in his prime or who's coming toward his prime, like a Paul George is in his prime, for Chris when I know I can't count on Chris physically. Now, if I can get Chris and keep Paul George and Kawhi, oh, I'm all in. I think they're right there with the Lakers, if not above the Lakers. But without Paul George, as much as I like CP3, I don't think I can do it.
By the way, 30 seconds left. LaMelo Ball, I heard yesterday, is going to be the number one pick in the draft. I think he's great on YouTube. I think he's fun. The word is he doesn't want to play defense. What do you make of that story that he's the number one pick?
Right. Yeah, well, one person I spoke to yesterday told me if he goes to Minnesota with D'Angelo Russell, it will be, quote-unquote, a mess. Melo has talent, but he's viewed as a kid that's kind of silly, kind of immature, may put up numbers, but at this point at least not going to play winning basketball. I was told if he goes to Golden State, where he won't play that much but can learn in a professional atmosphere, he could eventually become a really good player. That'd be good for him. But if he goes to Minnesota, maybe Detroit, there's talk about that, where he can kind of do what he wants and he'll be the star, then it's going to be trouble.
Chris Broussard, Odd Couple with Rob Parker every day. Good seeing you, bud.
All right, my man. You too.
Weather can be unpredictable. Get your wipers right. Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades. Walmart's where you get them. Last two times longer than other blades. Plus Rectech. How about that grill? A grill built by grillers for grillers. RECTEQ.com. You can start it and cook your protein, your meat by your phone. Rectech. RECTEQ.com. Hour three next.